every generation has gotten to the point where you can look back and they all thought the world was ending. And so it's very easy to get stuck in that narrative. And to me, logical thought often leads us to, we don't have the answer yet, therefore it doesn't work out. And it's that faith-based leap of, you know, faith, by definition, that exponential thinking that's like, here's what I can do, and I'm not going to step away from the small part that I can do. And here's what I'm going to continue to set the groundwork for a miracle. I love miracles, right? Miracles are things that, like, we don't logically understand, that have never occurred before and likely will never occur again in any other way.
Welcome to The Business of Doing Business. I'm your host, Dwayne Kerrigan. With 35 years in business and close to 30 ventures across 12 industries, I've seen a lot. Amid the celebrity allure of entrepreneurship, many exceptional entrepreneurs remain shadowed. Here, I team up with these hidden talents to unveil their challenges and successes. Dive in with me to unearth entrepreneurial gems, learn from our experiences, and get educated. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. We have Kurt Cronin's part two of a two-part conversation. And if you haven't listened to the first one, I'm going to encourage you to stop now, go back a week, listen to his first part, and then tune back again for this part. But if you have listened to number one, here's number two. Enjoy the conversation. Always glad to have Kurt on the show. Where else are you spending your time?
Well, it's really that arc of how do you help human transformation or human awakening, or now that my word for the year, human awareness, right? How do I help each of us be more aware? And you know, to me, the fun part is I don't get to know what kindling is going to support someone else with a spark. And so it's fun to have, like, okay, is it this story that supports them? Is it your podcast that supports them? Like, you know, the fun part is, can we have a whole array of kindling, so whenever any human gets a spark, they're supported and can ignite?
I often struggle with this the whole part about, you know, is this a potentially content-driven support process, or is it driven from the beginning within an individual? Because, you know, you brought up the word awareness again. This is kind of the third or fourth time that it's come up just talking about this podcast, because I think it's a powerful word, because, like I said earlier, without awareness, it's the impetus of growth. But people, you know, at what point can we help support people to make those steps, to step out of where they're at, step out of their comfort zone, move into, you know, an uncertain environment, and really start to push themselves to grow? I mean, it feels to me like people are wanting more and more certainty, and maybe that's just the world with technology and what we're providing them. You know, I mean, life today is a lot different than it was 50 years ago, and a lot different than it was 50 years before that. You know, it was just uncomfortable. I don't know if you have a perspective on it, but it's like, to me, it's one of those things that I constantly think about, and where we're going to be in the next 20 to 50 years based on, you know, what we're doing and what people are learning and how they're experiencing themselves. And I'm not talking about the 10%. Like, there's always going to be the 10% that are going to drive, grow, be hungry. And there'll be the 10 or 20% that it will never, but that middle ground where it's just like, it's a pretty comfortable life. And, you know, anyways, I don't know if you have any perspective.
The short answer is I'm not sure, but that's the most exciting part of discovery, right? Like for each of my kids, in the most intimate example, like what they're excited about is different week to week. And if I show up as the same dad that's trying to teach them as it was last week, I'm out, right? I've missed it. So it's constantly like, how do I show up? I mean, one of the greatest gifts, my son had an amazing cross-country coach. And we were like freshman year, he was running in his races, and he would feel bad that the kid next to him was going to have lost the race. So he would, like, you know, stop running and let the kid pass him. And I'm a competitor. So I was like, but I couldn't teach him that from
blow your mind, eh? You're like,
from a dad perspective, I was like, oh, well, I'm super excited that he's trying to be empathetic, but like he's actually not honoring them to be able to compete and be their best by competing and becoming his best. And so it was awesome where, like, we were able to, his coach appeared that like taught him to compete. And so that changed everything for him. And so the fun part for me is, okay, I want to help my kids become aware. And I know that there's certain pieces going to be best heard from me, certain pieces I'm trying to find who's going to have the better influence on each of them. And so it's exhilarating to see, how do we try everything, right? You know, getting to come up and share with your team the incredible ecosystem you've built. And it's difficult for the prophet to be respected in their own town, right? So if I can come in from left field and share the same truths that you do, like a lot of times it's difficult for someone to learn in an environment they're in. So if we can pull them out of that environment, put them into a peak state and put them back into the environment, get fundamentally different experience. And so that's really the passion of how do we try different modes and different stories, different exercises, different questions. I mean, that's one of the things that I used to worry about. Do I have the answer? And the moment I stopped having answers and just asking questions, everything changed. Because I realized if I can just ask a question and be present, 99% of the solution is right there, right? That listening, someone hearing, being heard is the part that changed the game versus any brilliance of any answer I was trying to provide. And like the moment that happened, like changed everything.
Yeah, I know. When you shared that, one of the big things that kind of came back to my memory was we brought you in to do a speech and to work with our team. And I think we had, I don't know, at the time, we didn't bring in our whole team, but I think we had 100 people there or something. And then we had you come in and, you know, do your speech and talk and kind of give perspective about leadership and stretching and growing yourself. And you're still doing that. Are you not? Are you still out on the road doing some talks? Yeah,
absolutely.
So if anybody ever wants to bring Kirk Cronin into their company, I mean, I can't recommend this guy enough. It's unbelievable. But then you and I did this whole piece on stage together. And I think you're right. I think, you know, the point I'm trying to make is having somebody else come in and give a different perspective and then putting them back into their area of excellence and then helping them, you know, kind of facilitate what they learned and the follow-up and the growth is where that is going to effectively implement some, you know, forward change.
Yeah, that was one of the most fun days because the transference of trust, right? The love that we share was clear to the audience. And therefore, they started from a place not of, okay, am I going to listen to this other crazy bald guy? Instead, it turned into, oh, this is one of Dwayne's brothers. And so that set the conditions where it was an open field. And then the questions were powerful, fun questions they likely wouldn't have asked you out of fear of asking you, but they can ask someone else and then you can hear it. And then that was where the fun flywheel of turning, where now everyone now gets to get into a field that's fundamentally different. Because one of the greatest challenges I see in the world is people go, well, you were in life or death fight, like we're not doing that. And I believe that's fundamentally untrue, right? All of us have an expiration date. All of us are choosing to spend our time in something that's important to us. I actually feel like I had the blessing of having a known expiration date potentially that night if we didn't solve the problem. But if on most people, if you don't get that catalytic timeline of, hey, that might happen today, tomorrow, 20 years from now, it becomes much more difficult to take action. That's why I love seeing entrepreneurs, visionaries, anyone that says, I'm going to take action now because I've chosen, even though no one said I have to do it. That's what's so exciting about people that are picking up their Thor's hammer, people that are doing what's theirs to do.
I agree with that. I think you hit that nail on the head in terms of people probably do have some perspective of the training or the budget or the team. You know, everybody's working towards one definitive mission and goal, whether it be that night or holistically, why they're there. You know, there's that purpose, if you will, or that compelling force that drives you forward. But I think you made a really good point is like, and people should take note of that, which is, you know, we are all moving to an end date and we all are functioning in a pressure cooker situation, whether it's raising our children the best way we can, whether it's building our own business, building teams, trying to get product to consumer, you know, solving customer service issues or whatever it is, that these are ongoing complex problems. And the fact that, you know, your competition is firing live rounds and they're out there to kill you at some level. You know, they'd be much happier if you were not in business and they have that business. So, you know, if they could, they'd blow you up fundamentally. Not all the time, but you know what I mean. I'm curious, what advice would you have for somebody who owns business who's, you know, got these challenges that are lying in front of them, and they're trying to build a cohesive unit and build a team towards trying to accomplish, you know, a specific goal, and they're struggling with whether it be, you know, team unity, whether it's communication, whether it's, you know, what are the things that they can kind of think about and address in the current business environment? Because, you know, things are not getting easier. And I don't personally think they are going to get easier for a while. I think we have headwinds in front of us. And although the stock market might show a little bit different right now, when you go and do some deep research about bankruptcies are at like an all-time high right now. So anyways, that's a lot. Sorry, but I'm curious.
It's not getting easier, but that's what makes it more valuable. You don't hand out trophies for the 1 mile walk, right? It's for the 26.2 mile run, right? Because it's hard, and it's, if it was easy, everybody would do it. And so going out into today's world and bringing together, bringing forth that which is yours to do, to me is the most exciting thing. So if you said, if I'm building a team, one is, what's the compelling vision? What's the thing that's so exciting? Because each of us only surrender our autonomy if there's something greater. I think no human ever surrenders their independence unless they think the leader is going to get them to a greater outcome than they get to on their own, right? So first, that vision's got to be so compelling that I want to put my life force into this, because I can see that doing this is much more valuable than the thing I'd be doing otherwise. And so first, the vision's so compelling that everyone can now say, I'm in. And then second is, okay, how do I now understand each person's needs? And of course, if it's 400 people, it's going to be your executives, right? That's why founders usually start off really powerfully, because the culture is embodied and they are in presence with it every single day, right? But then as you start to get layers down, they don't get access to that. And so either the organizational culture reflects that original founding vision energy, or it starts to lose it. And when it atrophies, that's when bureaucracy creaks in. So now, how do I now make sure I know and meeting the needs of each and every person so that they can now be at full embodiment and full power, and they can see how what they do for this organization allows me to change the game, right? I couldn't do goals for about 4 or 5 year period because I was like, I'm already tired. I can't do anything else. And I realized I hadn't set it toward the thing that mattered most. I switched my goals to, will this make me be the man I'd like to be when I walk my daughter down the aisle? And I hope that you don't stand between me and that goal, right? But when I connected it to the thing that mattered, that I would break a wall for, that's what changed everything. So usually people are like, hey, I'm just not excited about what we're doing. Like, how do you revamp the goal? How do you shift it so that it's attached to the thing that does matter? You know, and then the third, man, I love it. Richard Branson's is like, establish a clear vision, find the greatest humans on the planet, and then give them better resources than anybody else. And so, you know, how do I now give you better resources? And sometimes that may not be, hey, you have a limited amount of capital to deploy, but if you can give them belief, I'll take that resource over anything else, anytime. Belief in one, what they're doing; two, that you believe in them; and then three, believe in themselves.
That's a really big point. I mean, that is a fantastic point, because most people think, you know, resources is, you know, money. And so, and they spend so much time going out trying to raise money for their business to grow it, when they could just be focusing on, you know, the people's belief. And if, I mean, largely, if you ask many successful entrepreneurs, you know, would they take their people or their cash? Most will say, I'd rather have my people.
People all day long. Yeah,
100%. For us, for sure. There's just people that are irreplaceable in our organization that they just move mountains. Maybe can you just expand a little bit on belief and the key fundamental pieces in order to do that for the, you know, the person who might be struggling with that?
It's really just the greatest joy that we get to have in this life of discovery, right? The life of discovery, it's the, by definition, the thing they're being asked to do they haven't done before. So it's the fundamental act of creation, right? We're asking them to grow and expand beyond that which they've done before, because it wouldn't be exciting if we're asking the exact same thing. Then they would know they would have it. They'd already have the belief and they wouldn't need it. The reason they need that belief is because, hey, we're asking them to grow. We're asking them to be more than they thought they were before. And so that's the fun part is, and it actually doesn't matter if you make that objective, it's that you're in the fight and growing. I mean, I talked about my son. I think one of the most powerful conversations we had, I had been riding him the entire year, getting ready for the final cross country race. You know, need to visualize this period, need all these rituals. You know, here's what we're doing for all the prep, and gone through all the kind of like the transactional control freak, like best possible outcomes. And finally, we're on the way to the event. And I said, you know, I'm so proud of you. You're 20 times the man I ever could have been at this date, and 100 times the son I ever wanted in my life. And I'm so grateful for you. And I don't even care if you run this race today. You've already done the thing. Today, just go out there and play. And it was unbelievable just watching him run that day. He wasn't running with the pressure of running from scarcity. He wasn't running from, I have to do this or my dad, yada, yada, yada. He was just out there playing because he was released of, it was an idea I had, it got to convey, I believe in you. And so he just went and played. And there was a moment where he's powering up this hill. He's in like fourth or fifth place and he just crushes up right to the front. And so it was like unbelievable. I'm like, greatest moment of my life. And then I watched, I could feel him energetically go, what do I do up here? So he punted the race away. He totally punted the race away. He got to play, right? He got to compete. He got to experience something that he couldn't have experienced any other way. And so that was all I could have asked.
Well, those are the nice pieces about those. And whether it's at home or at work, you lead people to this. And I like how you say that, like it's the act of creation, because if they had done it before, they would believe that they could do it. So it's really about something that they have not done. It's something they have to embark on that is uncertain and unknown. And they have to move forward to a path that is, I don't want to say darkness, but it's a blank screen. It's something that they've never experienced before. And just, providing people the confidence that you believe in them and that you trust them and that win or lose, what we're going to experience through this whole process is going to benefit us in the future. Am I summing that up relatively well or not?
Absolutely. And if we grow together, it doesn't matter when people say SEALs are on no fail missions, it's not that SEALs never fail. It's that we only say we failed if we stop. Right. And so there's hundreds and dozens of setbacks across, you and I have joked, building a company, you just start out going, everything's wrong. What am I going to fix first? Right. And so this failure is just when you get to the terminal state and stop. Everything along the way is just growth experience. And so if I get to learn faster than everybody else because I fail 10 times a day, then that's a superpower. And so ideally, if we can get to the point where we fail really fast, that's actually learning at the highest speed, because it's only when I attach the word failure to it that it becomes disempowering. When it's, I have a new experience, that's the whole goal that I want for our children, for our friends, for our families. If I can have expanding experiences, that's growth. Growth is life. And that's the adventure.
Yeah, I feel like some people think, or too many people think, that life is a zero-sum game where it's either a win or a loss versus just a process of over and over and over and over experiences. And the more you put yourself out there to risk, the more you have to grow and learn, not necessarily a win.
No, and it's really the difference between two different options of perspectives, right? The perfection mindset is I have to be perfect. And if I have to be perfect, I have to control. Something goes wrong, I have to blame. I have to collude with others. I have to make excuses and stories. You can see everything's all rearward facing. Whereas discovery, all I care about is what outcome did I get? Did it work or not work? If it didn't work, then how can I pull a bigger group of people together to find out how to make it work? Because all I care about is that it works. I'm not worried about how I look. I'm not fixed mindset where I'm, Carolyn Dweck would have said fixed growth mindset, versus one is the perfection is the fixed mindset where if something happens that goes wrong, I am forever limited. The growth mindset is if something happens and goes wrong, I have learned more data to get to better next time. So it really becomes that difference between a perfection mindset where I'm constantly trying to control, and that takes so much energy and makes me so tight. Because the pressure of that, we know it cognitively when you say it. If I have to be perfect and I'm not perfect, I'm wrong. That's a heavy lift. But if it's discovery, if every single time that I'm learning something, I get to grow and expand, and every single time something's not working, I just get a bigger group of friends to try and make it better, then all of a sudden, now all we care about is front-facing goals and actions to be able to get play, right? It really becomes a life of play. That's what Sensei is like, turning my life of work into a work of art. Right now, I get to play and create on a continuous basis without the attachment to perfection. Now that's a life work in progress, right? Like that is not something that is easily maintained, because it's easy to snap back into the story we are born into, right? We have to be perfect, right? That's the kind of the pervasive model in the world right now, because it works to help drive the model we have lived in. Now we're trying to say, as entrepreneurs and creatives, what do we want to create for our kids, for grandkids, for, you know, 2, 3, 4 generations from now? How do we help them to live in that place of discovery so they can play?
If you give up, you know, that place of ego, I mean, because you had kind of said earlier, it's hard for people to get, and it is hard. It is hard. I agree 100%. It's hard for people to move off of perfection. And there's so many people.
And when I say people, I mean me.
Well, I agree. Like, me too. Like, it's, you know, you're trying to make everything right or perfect or whatever your story is around that phrase. If you can release the ego attachment towards, you know, that kind of outcome, then you remove that self-expectation or that self-story around having to be perfect. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, or I'm just kind of riffing here with you, brother.
100%. Fully aligned.
But that's a hard thing to do. Like, how do you, ego is a very tough, I think it's a very misunderstood concept, and I'm not sure we're going to cover it in this podcast, but it would probably be a good podcast to cover, because ego is what we interface with the world with, you know. That's like, that is how our, that's our interaction kind of level of consciousness, if you will. But it brings to you, and I don't mean by, when I say the word ego, I'm not thinking the macho ego, like somebody showing up all macho and shit. It's, you know, our need to be tied to our story, or our need to be tied to being right or perfect or control, and giving up that fundamental thinking of that drives us, that drives our ego.
Well, I think you nailed it, right? It's the thinking, right? We tend to think that all of our power comes from our thoughts, right? And we are not our thoughts, right? It's our true power comes from that heart center, right? The heart center where, like, we have all the math now. It says there's more signals that come from our heart to our head than our head to our heart. But that's where the culture we're born into is all. It's all our thoughts are who we are. And the moments we know our thoughts are just a thought, then we can release it, right? And like, I love some of of all the catastrophes I've ever had, most of them have never happened, right? And that's where our mind tends to race so far ahead and think of all these negative consequences instead of pulling back to presence. I mean, to me, what you're talking about is calling forth, like, hey, the true warrior, right? Warrior not being just a CEO, but like a courageous human that's willing to, the true warrior cuts through their story, either their personal or the story they're born into, and steps forth from their vision, right? And that's really that act of, I'm cutting through, whether it's perfection, whether it's whatever I was born into, and all the gifts I got from the story I was born into, because I think that's the part that I used to have, why was I born this way, that, no, like all of that's just playing into stepping forth from the vision I am now, right? All of my experiences have driven me to the point I am now. Now, what do I choose going forward? Now that I have this level of awareness, like, I can't wait. Who knows what level of awareness we'll have a year from now? Like, a whole different level of perspective and expertise if we keep asking questions. But that's why it's so much fun. Constant curiosity, constantly going, okay, I love listening to your podcast. I love listening to Andrew Huberman's podcast. I love reading. I love absorbing, like, all the lessons from my kids, the things they bring home. Like, either I didn't pay attention, they weren't in my school book, right? Because it's fundamentally different lessons than the ones that I recall. It's fantastic.
Yeah, kids are the best teachers. It's amazing what you learn from them when you really sit and listen and try not to impose your rules or your lessons and be their teacher, but just actually be their student and let them just really take in some of the things that they're saying. I mean, kids also say some ridiculously, like, stupid shit, but but it's fun. That's the fun side of it too, right? When they say it, you're like, oh my God, that was me when I was that age.
Oh, absolutely. The three oldest ones came to me about 3 or 4 years ago and say, hey Dad, we're tired of telling you, having you tell us what to do. Like, we want to be part of the decision process. And I was like, of course, like, they're my teachers. Now, of course, there's like chore time. And they're like, no, now we want to go back to kid mode. You're like, nope, you made 0300, you made it. You're now an adult. You get to participate fully.
That's funny. Dude, so when you're talking about, like, you're not your thoughts, can you elaborate a little bit on that for people? Because I think we get so stuck in our thoughts. We get really tied up in that what our perception is of what is in front of us is actually our reality, when in fact, it is really just a bunch of thoughts that we have kind of running through our brain, and we've convinced ourselves that that is our reality. And so I'm just curious if you've used any techniques to be able to help filter through your thoughts and help, I really hesitate to use the word control your thoughts, but really kind of, actually, I'm really thinking the opposite, because you have to let go of them and not control them. You have to release into them in order to see what's deeper. And I'm just curious if you've used any techniques to be able to overcome that.
Well, I thought you did a great job of it to start with. What I love, Allie Crum, Tom's sensei's daughter, she now runs mind, body, spirit integration at Stanford, right? And so she's really now proving out a lot of the science behind what he was teaching 40, 50 years ago. And she gave some great examples of, you know, we tend to think that our perception is reality. And the moment we realize that our perception is our perception changes everything, right? The moment that we're often fill in the blanks and we project things into our reality based on what we assume. And that's where a lot of, for me personally, my pain and my suffering came from. So the moment I can now, my favorite exercise for that is when I have a thought, realizing like, okay, it's like a waterfall, and I just release it. And the moment that I release that thought, then I'm like, oh, it's gone. And that for me was like the most mind blowing. Oh, that's, I can let that go whenever I want. Like any of those thoughts, and if I have a positive thought or negative thought, I get to fundamentally decide which of those I want to keep, which ones I'm going to open and hold on to, which ones I'm going to release. And so that's the exercise in meditation that's been the most powerful for me. If you said, how do I reset? Because my roommate, my internal dialogue is crazy all the time. And so, you know, to a lot of time do that reset. I love doing three sets of Wim Hof breathing, which for anyone that hasn't done it, it's like the, you know, inhale through the nose, exhale as forcefully. So 30 of those. And then at the top, hold as long as I can. So then, and then hold as long as I can. And then exhale as long, you know, all that out, and then hold at the bottom. Three full sets of those I found to be the most powerful reset for me in terms of clearing my roommate. And then I'm much better at meditating. I was not good at sitting and meditating quietly. You know, when Sensei first said, hey, Kurt, do you meditate? I said, Sensei, I'm so busy, I don't have time to sit and talk to myself, which is exactly why I needed meditation. And so I find that kind of clears the slate for me and then sets it up where now, like, I can sit in silence. And then if I have a thought, just not getting, when I found getting angry about having a thought made me have more thoughts. So now I just try and just release it and let it go.
I'm just going to recap the first, all the three sets of the breathing, 30 breaths, deep breaths, Wim Hof out. And then at the end of the 30, you hold at the top, breathe it out, and then hold it for as long as you can at the bottom. Correct? Three sets of those.
Get what I call it, blue ice, or kind of like that kind of free sensation at the top. The part that took me a while to accept was kind of like the holding at the bottom, that kind of the death practice at the bottom where I'm now empty, not holding any air. So that part has been where I'm, if you said in that whole process, where am I doing my work now? It's in that bottom part. Am I comfortable holding empty and then breathing again?
Yeah, that's the hardest part for sure. Like that is, it's, I mean, I find it extremely difficult. I just want to dive into your meditation process a little bit, because I haven't heard the waterfall thing before. So you sit in silence is, you know, basically your meditation. How long do you do this for?
The first three cycles of Wim Hof breathing usually takes about 10 minutes. And then I'll try and sit in silence for another 10 minutes.
Right. And then what is the waterfall? Can you explain that process and how would you lead a beginner that wanted to try, you know, that to help, you know, help their mindfulness and help, you know, release their thoughts? Because there's some unbelievably massive benefits in being able to let go of a thought, you know, at the snap of your finger. I mean, I'm getting better and better at it, but I used to be horrible at it. I mean, it would take a day sometimes. Like it just put me in a state of suffering, oftentimes a state of rage, but
and then suffering.
But ultimately, that's what causes suffering. But it could be rage. It could be depression. It could be sadness. Like, those are all thoughts that people that create suffering. It doesn't just have to be anger. It could be sadness. It could be deep sadness, anxiety. And I do think a lot of people have, I had it this morning. I was showering this morning. I don't know why, but I'm in the shower and I just had this anxious moment. Absolutely no reason. Wasn't really thinking about anything. I must have been, but I don't know what it was consciously. And I just had this feeling of anxiousness. And I was just like, okay, well, what is, you know, and so I go through a process. It's like, what is this? Is it true? Is it absolutely true? And then it kind of just makes me, it's like, no, this is not true. It's just my thoughts. And then it's like, okay, well, then as soon as it came in, it can leave. And I invite it to leave. I literally have a visualization that it comes in the left side and goes out the right side and off it goes. And I watch it and, you know, I used to wave at it and do all kinds of crazy techniques to try to like push it out. But, you know, that grows over time. I'm curious what your waterfall process is in case anybody is struggling. I mean, we all struggle. Anybody who says they don't, I think they're full of shit. But, you know, at some level, we all struggle with this process.
Anyone that said they weren't scared in combat, we said they lie about other things too. So
exactly.
Right. Totally agree. Well, first of all, to me, part of it's a little bit two separate processes. One is like the illusion that emotion, energy and motion goes away when you're centered, right? It doesn't go away. It's more, I have access to feel those emotions fully and walk through the exact same process that you just did, which is like, why am I ecstatic? Why am I sad? Why I just get to feel into, why is that? Right. And then, you know, start to integrate in and play with it versus most of my pain is when I deny my emotions. Right? When I'm like, I'm not sad. I'm fine. I'm fine with whatever just happened. I'm not fine with it. In the moment, like when a guy says they're fine, they're not fine. And when my wife says she's fine, she is not fine.
Definitely not fine. I mean, that's way worse than the guy.
So, the waterfall was just one that Sensei gave me that I found really powerful in terms of, because I kept getting really irritated when I had thoughts, because I'm like, I'm not going to have thoughts. Now I have thoughts. And so for me, it was just the process of just imagine kind of flowing overhead, like Last Mohicans when they're underneath the waterfall, is specifically how I imagine it, where I'm sitting underneath the waterfall, you know, that water just constantly flowing over and on its way to the sea. And so whenever I have a thought, I'm just like, oh, wow, interesting. I let it go. And that changed the game for me, no longer getting angrier about the fact that I had a thought, which made me have more thoughts and was just like a train wreck of a downward spiral that would ruin my entire meditation. And I'm like, oh, I have a thought, and just let it go. And I'll also like, I'll have a notepad of like, hey, this is important to me. I'll do the same thing in my bed. Like, I'll sketch it down. And by writing it down, then that allows me to like release it as well. Like, oh, I need to remember this for later. Like, write it down. So now I can release it and say, okay, it's there. Yeah, you know, one is if I don't want it, I just let it go. If I need it, I'll sketch it down, and then allows me to get back to, ideally, back to center.
And you sketch it down in your meditation. I love it. That's cool.
If it's one that otherwise I'm like, I have to remember that, and then I'll spend the entire rest of the meditation trying to remember that.
Yeah. Right. Yep. Okay. Cool. Dude, that's awesome. Thank you. I mean, appreciate that. I don't know what else you got going on in your life. I called you up and said, hey, we should have another chat. And so I'm always interested in catching up with you and hearing what you got going on. But we have spoke now for an hour and 30 minutes, which I cannot believe, actually. It feels like we've been talking for 15.
I think there's a lot of fear in the world right now, right? That false expectations appearing real. And I think I love Viktor Frankl's quote, we have the freedom to choose. We have the freedom to choose whether we want to, there's facts in the story we make up that, and there's the truth that we choose. And so the moment we're all free to own, that we get to choose which truth we're going to believe as an individual, as a family, as a collective, I think that's really important right now, right? Because it's really easy to give up our autonomy and say, this happened in the world, therefore this, right? Like, you kind of run that story, and it's not always the one that's the most powerful for us. And for me, the most exciting is, yes, there's a great deal of uncertainty. That's also opportunity for deciding, how do we want to raise the next generation of leaders, right? How do we want to show up every single day? Because what I feel has become more important than ever before is leadership. leaders that can help people through the uncertainty, that can say, like, I don't know how we're going to get to the end of this, and I'm convicted that we're going to get through it if we get through it together. And I don't have all the answers, and I don't pretend to have all the answers, but I do believe if we can come together, we can solve any of these things. And that, for me, is the edge that you see organizations that are thriving, you know, in the current uncertainty, because that is like a magnet where you're going to get the best talent. You're going to get, you know, the best customers, the best clients. You're going to be surrounded by everyone that's going to follow that coherent energy and that vision, because we all want greater outcomes than those we would get to otherwise. And so I think there's a huge opportunity right now for leaders to stand up and help others, and helping others that will also help build their organizations, their communities, their families.
And so are you talking about political leaders, or are you referring to business leaders or leaders in every area, like church and because there is a lot of fear out there right now. There is a lot of concern. I mean, we grew up in Cold War, basically. And so I was probably the last of the last generation to do the drills, you know, when the alarms went off, we jumped under the table, and it was obviously a nuclear drill and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, we hadn't had that risk or that fear in the world. There's a lot of conflicts that are spurring up around the world. Is this what you're referring to? Or are you talking about at home here in, you know, North America, whether it's the US or in Canada? I'm curious on your perspective of that.
Yes, universally applied. Every generation has gotten to the point where you can look back and they all thought the world was ending. And so it's very easy to get stuck in that narrative. And to me, logical thought often leads us to, we don't have the answer yet, therefore it doesn't work out. And it's that faith-based leap of, you know, faith by definition, that exponential thinking that's like, here's what I can do, and I'm not going to step away from the small part that I can do. And here's what I'm going to continue to set the groundwork for a miracle. I love miracles, right? Miracles are things that, like, we don't logically understand, that have never occurred before and likely will never occur again in any other way. In my entire life, I've been blessed to live through many and be surrounded by friends that are miracles and family that are miracles. And so universally, I think it's very easy in uncertain times to say, like, this one's worse than any of the others. And when you ask, what do I do to get ready for tomorrow? I don't know what's going to happen. But I look back the entire course of the 47 laps around the sun that I've had, like, there are, you know, at least 16 moments that I thought, like, this is the end. And I've had the good fortune to survive through. So, like, based on that data, at least I have 1/17th chance of the next, right? And I'm a lot more optimistic than that. But for me, it's the fun part of when you get to look at back the history of, here's all the amazing things that have occurred and all the things. And when you look across humanity, look at all the things that humanity survived. My favorite conversation with the kids is like, look, a whole bunch of things went right for a whole bunch of your ancestors for you to get here today. Like, for all of them to survive on both those trees to get here, like, you get to decide what you're going to carry forth in your life. Just please don't start back in, like, you know, 2 billion BC. Try and start, like, with, on the shoulders of all the giants that we've gotten to learn from and live behind.
It's a great perspective. I mean, I'm actually glad you brought this up at the end of this podcast here, because we do have a lot of people who are, fear in a lot of areas. I mean, you know, my wife and I went grocery shopping. Sorry, I'll restate that. My wife went grocery shopping. She came back with a bag of groceries, and she sat it down on the counter, and she goes, like, can you believe that this bag of groceries cost $100? And I was blown away. I mean, I don't do the grocery shopping in the house, and so I have very little perspective on what it costs. And, you know, we have real fear out there with rising food costs, rising, you know, inflation's gotten into control, allegedly under control, but there are real issues out there with, you know, people who are not able to purchase the quality food that they should be purchasing. And so there's fear everywhere in every component. But I'm glad that, you know, you brought this up, because I'm not one of those people who is about fear mongering. When people send me stuff from emails or text messages or on social, I really am a believer that, and not in a naive way, but I'm a believer in faith and in grace, that there will be a solution that shows up. But in order for that to happen, people have to contribute to society. People have to be willing to be a part of that process, and whether they are actually the ones coming up with those, you know, ideas or thoughts, but they are representing their humanity and good faith to one another. And if we just do more of that, you know, I think universally, and maybe this is me smoking hopium or something, but I really do believe that the faith of the universe is in the hands of us as people, and how we treat one another and how we help each other. So I think that aligns with what you're saying, and you know, I'm glad you brought it up, because it is important for us to, you know, so at the end of this, you know, when you guys are done listening to this podcast today, that you listen to it, go out and find an opportunity to help support somebody, help somebody, whether it's helping somebody across the street or opening the door for somebody, but just maybe do something to show that you care. And, you know, somebody that you don't even know, random act of kindness.
Yeah. One of Sensei's favorite quotes, and I think he got it from Buckminster Fuller, was, if we can just get 7 billion people to be crew members on this spaceship Earth instead of passengers, it'll change everything.
That's true. That's very true. And I think that's good. You know, when we circle back and when you talked about at the very beginning, living discovery is not being a passenger. Living discovery is putting yourself out there and participating in the process and stretching yourself and living in this realm of uncertainty and being okay with, you know, a little bit of chaos in your life and accepting it and growing from the experience. Where I get stuck a little bit is with people who, like, they say they want help. They're driven people, but they either don't have the awareness, or they're not willing to put themselves out there to make the change that's required in their life. And it's like watching a slow moving train accident. Like, it's like, don't you see that train coming? Yeah. It's a real struggle to be a bystander, to watch people, you know, blow up their lives in ways that are significant, and they deserve more. But how do you push somebody to do something that you can see as a spectator, but where they just either refuse to see it or acknowledge it, or they're stuck in a too painful of a place that doesn't allow them to take action?
Well, this is the part I get the most excited about, and I was trying to allude to, is the curiosity of, the house is on fire, we got to get them out, right? Like, how do we get them an experience that might be in a honey badger race car, it might be in a Broadway show, it might be in a hike across the canyons, it might be in a desert, the back of a desert trailer going in Morocco, right? I don't know what that thing's going to be that's unlocked, but that is that antidote I'm trying to find, where in the zone that they're in, I've often found it challenging to wake people up. And so the domain of expertise they're in, so like, if I can rip them out, that's the only beauty of combat. The only fundamental reason that, like, I was put into life as an assassin was because I get to now be a loving teddy bear and people don't blow it off, right? I can tell them combat stories. If I told them the same story about my kids without my background, it doesn't hit. If it's like, hey, I can do this in combat, or I can do this with kids. And so to me, that's that piece of, like, combat happens to be one, but for the stubborn people we love, it's like, okay, what's the embodied experience we're going to rip them out of to be able to help? We're going to call it mandatory fun, right? We're going to have mandatory fun to ideally help put them into a different place and come back. And that's, you know, my attachment has been, it has to unfold on my timeline, or my attachment has been, I don't want that time or that pain for them. And that's where I've often been completely wrong in that. That's just part of the process, right? They can't, that's that Siddhartha quote for me. That's the fires of hell of, like, the wisdom has to be earned, right? Like, I wouldn't want any of my kids to go through the things I've gone through. And I know they're going to go through 10 times more, because ideally I'm giving them a foundation that they're going to be 10 times more difficult in the trials than the small ones I've ever done, right? I think they're going to do things that are infinitely more painful and infinitely more powerful. And so, like, that's where I get stuck when I get attached to trying to short circuit the process every time. There's a component of that that I believe is part of it.
I think to your point, like sometimes you just, as much as you want it for somebody, they don't want it for themselves. They have to go through the experience and create that wisdom or, you know, that allows them to eventually, you know, see it. I mean, actually, I think what you're describing, or what the way I'm perceiving what you're describing, you know, has led me to, I mean, I was born and raised Catholic, but you know, I actually believe in reincarnation. And I think part of the reason why I believe in reincarnation, there's a couple of reasons. One, when I look at my two kids, and I love them both dearly, like I'd do anything for them, but one of them is a old soul, and the other one is just feels like a newer soul. And there was just like just things where it was just like, how is this even possible? And I think every parent relates to that kind of concept. That's not new on me. It's not like I have a special kid. It's just, that was the first thing that kind of tweaked me to it. And then, you know, I think, or I believe that what has allowed me to find peace, although it frustrates me still when I see people who are in need help or 10 collective people around them can see like this is going to be a fucking train wreck, but they can't see it. Whether it's, you know, money, whether it's financial, whether it's drugs, whether it's, you know, narcissism, it could be lots of stuff. I started just to subscribe that I believe in this world, like we're on the lessons that I learn through this world, I will take to the next one. And maybe it is going to take this world or this human species to, you know, have the spirits, if you will, you know, the spiritual part of us to be able to learn and become wiser over generation, over generation, over generation, to the point where we can evolve as a species to, you know, this utopian society. I mean, I've never really kind of explained it, so this might sound a little cuckoo, but it's not. I mean, I'm a pretty pragmatic guy, but those were the two kind of things that I kind of believe in. And that's the only thing that helps me when I see somebody that's in pain and they're not willing to do what it takes to shift.
Well, I finally resolved my lifelong conflict between fate and faith. So fate to me is when on that side, whatever you call it, you know, a dear friend of ours calls it emptiness from an atheist perspective. Like I call it Christ consciousness from my Lutheran upbringing, but like whatever people call that state, for me, that's that state of infinite knowledge. And that's where fate is the plan we put in place. And then the opposite side, that on the anamnesis, when we start over again and learn from the beginning, then faith is that little cord that pulls us along that we don't have any awareness of, and all the breadcrumbs we hit along the way, then you're like, oh, this couldn't have happened any other way, right? To me, it's whichever side of infinite knowledge that you're sitting on. And for me, that was like, oh, of course, they're both correct. One is like, if we only had a state of infinite bliss, like we wouldn't have contrast. And so we come back around and start over again to remember how epic it is to have infinite bliss and oneness. And so that's how I can live with it.
Yeah, that's interesting. It is true. Like when you think about faith and where we end up, and I think, you know, and it doesn't have to be, when I use the word faith, I'm not necessarily talking about God in regards to a religion, you know, a God, whatever religion you subscribe to, but it's just the feeling of faith that things will work out, you know, that how I got to where I am today, I mean, it could only be a fucking miracle. That I'm still alive based on, you know, some of the stuff that I, you know, done in my past. And especially for someone like you, it's like, you know, you said it earlier, 16, you know, there's 16 times that you can think of that you shouldn't be here, but you are. And, you know, the journey that you guys had, you and Jules had with, you know, your children, and the commitment that you had to that process, you know, raising and growing your family and having, if I can, the miscarriages and whatnot. And it's just, it could only be, and actually it's like funny, even like my mom had a miscarriage. So no chance of me being here on this planet if my mom had not had a miscarriage. Like that's a fucking miracle for me. You know, she had had, they wanted to have two kids. They weren't having more than two kids. So I was the second of the two now, like my sister's older than me. And she had the first one, there's just no chance of me being, you know, on this earth. And so all of that kind of stuff, how can you not have a little bit of faith that things will work out, that things are here working for us, you know, not to us, but we just can't see it. You know, we cannot pull ourselves out of our, you know, and this is the ego part. We can't pull ourselves out of the ego part to see that everything that's happening is happening for us, not to us. Yeah, it becomes a struggle for me sometimes, especially when people are close and they struggle with, you know, taking the action. And when and I guess, and this is like the pragmatic side of me too, is you know, taking action is just a simple, it's a simple process of like, hey, here's the, like, and this isn't the perfect process, but it's, let's get some things on paper. Let's take a look at it. Let's see it as it is, not worse than it is. And then let's take this list and get it on a calendar and just go out and just kick the can. You know, just go out and just, let's just bunt the ball around, you know, you don't have to reach for the stars. You just have to start kicking the can slowly down the road and just playing with a little bit and enjoying that process of executing rather than always living this state of fear that, you know, I'm not enough. And if I'm not enough, I won't be loved or people won't care for me or I'll be a letdown to them or whatever the story is that they carry around.
And I didn't understand when you used to start say kicking the can, I used to get mad because I was like, well, you're devaluing the thing you're doing, but it's actually, you're like, no, I'm taking it from that plane of perfection and I'm bringing it down to the point of play. Right. I'm just saying, I'm just kicking the can, right? I'm just doing the thing. I'm doing the thing that I haven't done forever because I'm trying to be perfect and by not doing anything, nothing's progressing and it's all dying, right? And instead, kicking the can is I'm going to play every single day. And by playing, allow it to be alive. And by allowing it to be alive, like we're going to learn, grow and evolve and then take it down the road.
I always think when you, like, just as you were saying that, I was just thinking like back in the day when you would split rocks with a chisel and a hammer. Or marble, I think it was marble, but
my kids are doing that outside right now. Back in the day.
Back in the day. You know, they hit it 1,000 times. And on the 1,001 time, boom, it breaks open. You know, and they don't know when that's gonna be, but they're not necessarily worried about when it happens. They just know that if I just do it enough, if I just practice enough, if I just show up enough, if I just give it, you know, enough love, or if I just, you know, execute enough constantly and not give up and just stay with the practice. And yes, you have to practice perfectly. And, you know, like doing the wrong thing over and over and over again is not going to get you the results you're looking for. But that's where, you know, you bring people in and listen to them and ask questions and seek for advice and look to grow. You know, that's exactly what we talked about with the meditation piece. And a thought is just a thought, right? We attach ourselves to so much shit. And it is the root of what is happening around the world because we've attached to the story of history or the story of religion or the story of, you know, our people or whatever. And I get it, but too much attachment results in usually a pain.
No, I love it. I had no idea where we're going, but it was always look, I think this podcast is yours to do. It's been fun to watch you in general ignite in life. Like if just watching your whole world view expands, like both in contributing to people and like just your uncanny ability to like ask questions, listen and be undyingly curious, and then get to the heart of everything you want to say across like multiple domains of people with varying degrees of openness. And it's amazing, massively impactful. It's designed to serve. It's designed like, hey, let me get perspective from people I love that I think is going to allow you. And it all comes from a centered place. You have an amazing ability to channel. That's the piece that's, you know, often the most difficult for me in flat terrains is like you put me in front of somebody, the field's going to show up and it's going to be what that person needs. What I love is your ability to channel. Here's what my audience needs that might be separate from what Dwayne needs, but I'm going to ask it from an audience's perspective. And that's a superpower, right? That's not a known thing everybody has.
Well, I don't know about that, but thank you. Appreciate the words. And I really do love what we're doing. You know, it's a matter of having quality people on like you and the guests that we've had. We've had some unbelievably phenomenal guests, like just legends. And that's what the intention of the podcast was to find those diamonds that are out there still kind of doing it. And they're not famous and they're not necessarily in magazines or in the Forbes 100, top 100 list or whatever, but they've got their own life experiences and they have a story to tell. To me, I believe it's relatable to everyday average, you know, people who are just like, hey, you know what? It's not just me. Other people are here too. Other people are struggling. You never know when you're asking a question if a nugget is going to come out, this little tidbit that somebody that connects with one person and all of a sudden is a ripple effect and changes their life. But you change one person's life, you don't just change their life, you change their children's life, you change the people's lives around them. And now they become an example. That's what we're trying to do.
Well, you're not trying. You're doing it.
Well, lots more work to do.
We didn't get dressed up for nothing.
That's right. If you're going to do something, might as well fucking do it right, as my dad always used to say. So
you don't do it again.
Yeah. Dude, thank you so much for coming today. This is, as always, it's an awesome conversation. Your insights are, exponential in you know, the perspective that you provide. And guys, Kurt Cronin, where can they find you? Are you going to hand out your cell phone number again? You did that last time.
Nobody called. No surprise.
It was the second podcast. We probably didn't have anybody listening at that time. No, I'm just kidding. Like I said, you're the most listened to podcast that we've had. So I appreciate you coming back on the show. I always love the conversation. Looking to do more with you in the future. We've talked about it before, but I think I'd love to do, a business, interaction, live interaction. I'm really giving a lot of thought to that, how we could do that, whether it's on a YouTube live event or whatever. But I think that would be kind of cool. Maybe take some people through some processes if they're struggling, whether it be personally or in their business. You and I could kind of dive into that. I think that would be really cool to do if you're open to it.
Absolutely.
Not to put you on the spot. What the hell are you going to say, right? That's how you get yeses.
Yes.
Dude, thanks again for being here. Can't thank you enough. I'm always excited to talk to you, as I said. So we really appreciate you.
Thank you. Thanks for all you're doing.
All right. Thanks, buddy. Thanks for listening. I appreciate you being with us. If you found value in the show and know a friend or a coworker who could benefit from the conversation, please share the link via text or on social media. Remember, each share creates a ripple effect of knowledge and inspiration. We'll see you next week.
The views, information, or opinions expressed by guests during the Business of Doing Business podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of Dwayne Kerrigan and his affiliates. Dwayne Kerrigan or the Business of Doing Business podcast is not responsible for and does not verify the accuracy of any of the information contained in the podcast series. The primary purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. Listeners are advised to consult with a qualified professional or specialist before making any decisions based on the content of this podcast.